Facebook is still the largest social media platform, the most users, and there's a lot of people my age that hasn't seen the information that I've been posting on Reels and TikTok.
Nobody I talk to is on Facebook, so I don't really know much about Facebook right now.
I grew a million followers on Facebook in the shortest time that I've grew a million across all my other platforms.
You're making money around 6 to 8 ways across your business at any given time. That's accurate?
That's pretty accurate. I never approached this from a money perspective. And I remember I got my first deal and it was for like $300. And I was like, yo, I could get paid.
Is there anything right now that you could tell our listeners that's like, here's what I'm hearing right now, here's what you should be doing?
When someone's like, oh man, I need to figure out how to make money on social media, like 20 ideas come to my mind like right away.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zierer, and today we're speaking with Todd Anderson, known to his 3 million plus followers across platforms as Turnip Vegan. Todd has built a thriving creator business since going full-time in 2020. It is brand deals, it is recipe products, it is even ticketed group retreats. Core to Todd's success is his character. He's a really positive and earnest guy. I think it shows in his work, and it comes across, for sure, in this really lovely conversation. Enjoy. So you have been creating content for over a decade, I think about 13 years ago, in various ways, but you quit your job, previous job, to take it seriously as a career in about 2020. And then I think it's been your primary income for a shorter stretch. So that's a few different timelines. Can you walk me through that timeline of how you got into making content and then when it got serious as actually your career?
For me, like, I actually started off as a producer in Palm Springs. And so I'm very, you know, savvy when it comes to Pro Tools and those type of things. But I also was the videographer for our rap group. And so I've always been into filming. And so I moved to San Diego around 2013. And a couple years after that, I decided to go vegan. And right away, I reached out to like some top vegans in San Diego. One was a marathon runner. Another one was he started a few restaurants in San Diego, and another one was a boxer. And I just started reaching out to these people and be like, hey, can I come to your restaurant? Hey, can I come to where you're working out at and just film you and just pick your brain and learn from you and use that as examples to show the community? And so I've done that I did that up until around 2019. And, you know, I never had really too much growth. I think I got to 20,000 followers on Instagram. And, you know, that made me happy at that point. But my fiance at that moment was like, hey, you know what? I see you're very passionate about this. Why don't you take it serious and, you know, quit your job and I'll be here to help support us. That was the first time, Francis, in my life where I didn't know where my next paycheck was coming from. But I look back on it now and that was such a beautiful moment because that brought the best out of me. And so over that year, I started sharing more content. I started growing a little bit. I opened a cafe in San Diego called Spoiled Vegans Cafe. And so this is right around the time TikTok got hot. And two things happened with TikTok that changed my career. So number one, I was lucky to be invited to a small group, maybe one of the first groups where they started bringing content creators together and coaching them on how to, you know, create better content. One of the challenges they gave us was to create a video telling a story in 15 seconds. That right there really helped me sharpen my content creation skills. Before then, I was making videos that was 4 or 5 minutes long and just drug out and really had no direction. And so after continuing that course, I took that knowledge back to Instagram. And that's when I started to grow on both platforms using, you know, the storytelling in 15 seconds and being able to expand on that. Another thing that happened is during the cafe, I just went outside one day. We made these beautiful croissant sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches that a non-vegan would walk by and be like, yo, that looks delicious. I would love to try that. And I just did a quick video and then woke up the next morning, came down to the cafe. We were lucky too. Our cafe was below where I lived. I walked downstairs and there's all these kids on skateboards, and I wouldn't say kids, but youth on skateboards just lined up to try the food. And I'm just like, wow, like that's incredible. The power of a short video and what it could do and change your business. And so that is when I started to take content creation serious, I would say around 2020. And, you know, from there, I just expanded to multiple platforms. So IG was my first love, and then TikTok. And then I moved over to Snapchat and YouTube. And now right now, my I think my top platform right now is Facebook. And so that's how my journey got from, you know, just doing it for fun and getting it to the level where it's actually a profession. In 2020, I started, you know, getting content creation deals. And I remember I got my first deal and it was for like $300. And I was like, yo, I could get paid.
Who was it with? What kind of company was it with paying you $300?
And I think it was a company called Amy's Kitchen. And they do like a lot of,
they do like the canned beans and stuff. I know them, burritos, frozen burritos.
And so that was the, you know, probably first paid deal that I got. And, you know, I learned a lot. I got an agent probably 6 months into, you know, 2020. And from there, I learned the business and here we are today.
Okay. There's a lot in there I want to go on, but first, it sounds like 2020, this kind of time, it was this some circumstances coming together that you were really advantaged already to take advantage of. Basically, you'd been filming for so long and you'd been kind of trying to mess around with video on Instagram. But that was back before Instagram was really optimized for video. Reels wasn't out yet. So basically, you'd been trying to make things work, but also not really understanding like, OK, I got to make it 15 seconds. It's too long of a video. You'd been trying to make all these things work for a while. And then 2020 hits. Instagram starts doing video, I think, in that August, but then TikTok is really your proving ground. And you said that you were part of this group that was being coached. Was that like a group from TikTok, like in, you know, somewhere, maybe it was in San Diego or in LA, there's some people coming together and like, okay, we're going to train people how to take advantage of our platform to raise the quality bar on our platform. That's when it really starts to kick off for you, is when you kind of learn the codes of these platforms.
Correct. Correct. I think it just really showed me to take this serious. Before, it was just like for fun. It was just to show people and prove a point. But then I started seeing the business model starting to develop. And to back up a little bit, when I was posting on IG, when Reels first came out, a lot of people wasn't posting Reels, like especially food content was photos. You know, you would see people post a photo for a paid advertisement. I'm like, wow, that's, you know, easy work right there. But for me, it was more storytelling before it was like, you know, something really popular. And so I knew I had an advantage on video because a lot of us, you know, a lot of, you know, content creators mind were focused on just only creating photos. And so I knew I had that advantage. And, you know, I took that opportunity and ran with it and, you know, ran my numbers up as a content creator and different social media platforms before it became so saturated.
Yeah, that's what you were just saying about, like, you know, focusing on the story and using video. I'm curious, in as much as your time making videos before the content world, right? When you were the videographer for your rap group and working with other brands, like what about that and that way of learning how to do video is still really apparent in your work today? Like what DNA from your sort of education of making video for years before you're making it for social media, what about that is so apparent and core to the way you do videos on social today?
Well, I struggle with this all the time and I love cinematic. I love high quality. I love storytelling. I love the emotions that certain videos could bring out of you. And I started initially doing that in, you know, the first year, I would say up to about 2022, 2023. But then I noticed that type of content was actually causing people to swipe a little bit more because it's too polished. And so now I'm like in between a space where I think it's kind of coming back to cinematic and, you know, the storytelling, and that is what separates you. And so I feel like there's been levels of, you know, cinematic is great, but, you know, now it's not good and now it's headed back. But that's something that is in my DNA that I've always loved. And that's what brings me joy, not just filming just the film, but actually storytelling and bringing, you know, emotions to the viewer.
Mm-hmm. I want to understand your business and how it's grown. But to start, just to give the listener a picture of where you're at today, I think you told me when we first spoke about doing this that you had, that you're making money around 6 to 8 ways across your business at any given time. Is that, that's accurate?
That's pretty accurate.
Can you list out like the various, your 6 to 8 revenue streams right now, like in 2026, what are the ways you're making your living?
Okay. So of course, brand deals. I do retreats. I'm actually leaving tomorrow to Belize to do a retreat. I have a physical cookbook that I self-publish and also have eBooks. I built something called the Turnip Vegan Recipe Club, which is a subscription base outside of social media that gives access to 200 plus recipes that I've made over the last 6 years. Plus, I'm always adding more to it. I've released multiple products. So right now I have a collaboration with a company called North Spore, where you can order a lion's mane kit, have it delivered to your house and grow, you know, lion's mane right there at home. There's a few other I'm missing. Of course, the monetizations on Facebook and Instagram and, you know, YouTube. But yeah, those are a few that come to mind.
Most of the people I talk to who have brand deals as part of their business, it tends to be the largest portion of the revenue. Does that hold true for you as well?
I've seen this shift. So every year that number is shifting more towards self-dependent. And I would say last year was one of the first years that it was pretty even, you know, and this year is looking the same. And so, yeah, I definitely started off depending 100% on brand deals. But now it's like shifting. Like I'm understanding, you know, the power of the brand I've built and how I can maneuver and, you know, make different avenues as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds like you want to and are actively moving towards more of a model where it's people in your audience and your community paying you for goods and services like this retreat, like the recipes, the recipe club. It's on your website right now. It's, I don't know if this is up to date. It says it's 170 recipes you get access for $9.99 a month. How does that do it? Because that to me, like when I see something like that, right? Because there's so many recipes, it's easy to find recipes on the internet. I imagine that there's a lot of people in your audience who've built this strong relationship with you and your work though. And so for them, it's like, one, it's a way to support you. Two, it's a way to get the recipes that you're making in your videos. But I'm interested because that just seems like a product that could be hard to compete in the marketplace because there's so many free recipes. So tell me a bit about that recipe club.
Good question, too. So the recipe club, yes, it is outdated. It's up to 200 plus. I add recipes, you know, monthly. I would say I had the same thought process probably 2 years ago. So initially, I started the recipe club because I saw that we could do subscriptions on IG. I saw we could do subscriptions on YouTube. And to me, that just didn't make sense to build more into a funnel that I have no control over. And so I built, you know, my own. And so, I would say like what separates the recipe club and why people would, you know, sign up for the recipe club. And you're right. You could just go on AI and ask for recipes now. But I've really put my mind, my heart and soul into creating recipes. And so the things that you'll see come from me are very unique that AI hasn't even thought of yet. You know, I mean, probably could. But for example, I did a series last month that did really well. And I don't know if you saw, ever seen SpongeBob, and he has like his pretty patties, he has his burgers. And so he had the one episode where he had pretty patties and it was burgers, all different colors. And so I did a series of, you know, making these burgers, but plant-based, but looks so delicious that vegan or not, you know, and to me that was very nostalgic, but also not focused on vegans. Like a lot of people relate to SpongeBob and pretty patties. And so I made the first one I did, I made a red burger and the buns was infused with beets. I made a purple sauce that was infused with butterfly pea powder. And so these are just raw, different things that people don't normally see. And so I think I still am doing well in that area because I put that energy into it. And also it's a piece of me. And that's one thing I learned too through social media is that, yes, people can go get these recipes from other places, but I think it's a good energy that I provide that passes through those recipes that is contagious to the person that's making it on the other end. And, you know,
no, I agree. I mean, among creators with subscription products, my kind of very boiled down thesis is that people will pay for a subscription product from a creator for one of two reasons, or these two reasons kind of mixed. And one of these is exclusive information that you truly cannot get somewhere else. And the other is just a desire to support that creator, regardless of if they're even going to use the information provided. And for you, it's clearly a mix of both. And it, I mean, it's what you were saying like 5 minutes ago about sort of the way you present yourself and the way you move on social media, being very yourself, your values are pretty legible and clear, and you know, you wear yourself on your sleeve, and like people then want to support that and pay you because they probably, this is just my theory, right? They appreciate the way
very
you
good
move.
Theory.
Yeah.
Like I said, I never, and this could be backwards thinking, but I never focus on money first. It's always my intent first. And in the beginning, I gave out a lot of my recipes for free. I'll just put them into the caption and not ask for a sale or not ask for you to give anything. Just give, give, give. And I feel that is why my audience is so given back to me. Because a lot of these recipes, I'll just put in a caption. Like, I'm not gatekeeping. You know, my main intention is to help someone, inspire. And if, you know, you want to try plant-based food, I don't want it to be boring for you. And so if that's my intent, then that's what drives me. But I just feel, you know, lucky to not always have money, number one.
Yeah. While we're still on the topic of money, I have two more questions on this. One, you said that, you know, at the beginning, your fiance gave you the support to quit your job and do this. And I often see that too with in creators who have life partners, right? That they were able to build their business and start their business because of support from their partner. And then two, you said that I think it was 2020 when you got that Amy's brand deal for $300. And then around 6 months after that you started working with an agent. At what point, like what year specifically, around what time did, and at that point, how large was your following? How many ways were you making money? At what point in the growth of this business did you feel that you'd crossed some point where, okay, now this is sustainable. I feel good. I'm not like stressed about if this is going to work anymore or not. It's working. At what point was that? And around how large was your audience and how many ways were you making money?
I would definitely say it's around that time where I had the partnership with Amy, because like I said, I was so ahead of the game on Reels that, you know, the numbers spoke for themselves. There wasn't a lot of food creators, especially males, that were creating food content at that time. And so my views numbers were incredible. And I think right away that brought a lot of brands to me at that point. And I would say in the last 6 years, that window from probably the last 6 months of 2020 to the end, I think I got the most brand deals in the shortest period of time. You know, it was back to back where I was doing 5-6 brand deals per month, all in line with my values and all brands that I've worked with in the past. But the beautiful thing about giving and not having always money in the front of your mind, and don't get me wrong, like, we need money to survive. I need money to build a greenhouse. But the beautiful thing about it is when you show up and give to others in a positive way without asking for anything back, it comes back to you. And so all those 2-3 years of filming, I went vegan in 2016. So from 2016 to 2020, all that free work I did came back to me. Those brands that I filmed for free reached out to me for opportunities or told the next person about me, you know? And so I just sat back and watched the beauty of giving coming back to you. And that was that period of those 6 months. And so I had an agent, which was interesting. My agent was from Canada and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what my value was. I didn't know what to ask for. I didn't know what to charge for. And I was with this agent for almost 2 years. And she taught me so much to the point where, you know, after those 2 years, I started to manage myself for a year or so. But yeah, it was just a beautiful time during that 6 months where I got the most deals in 2020.
And then that was just the foundation for everything that's come out.
Yeah.
If you're a creator, you probably did not get into this to spend hours uploading files, writing tags, organizing assets, and digging through analytics. That's why OpenVideo built an MCP server just for creators. It lets an AI agent manage the operational side of your video business from a single prompt, uploading, tagging, organizing, and analyzing your entire channel for you. And unlike traditional platforms, it all happens on infrastructure you control. So let AI do the busy work while you do the important work of creating content your audience can't live without. See how you can do more with AI at open.video/MCP. That's open.video/MCP. The retreats. So a question about the retreats. First, let me give you some context of another business I heard about recently. I have another podcast, Tasteland Listener. Listen to Tasteland Listener. I have another podcast called Tasteland where we recently interviewed the editor of this magazine, Roads and Kingdoms. And I'll try to keep it quick. Basically, this magazine was founded in partnership with Anthony Bourdain a while back. And then after he passed, it kind of went quiet for a little while, and then it came back. But the magazine, really high quality physical magazine, good writing, good reporting. The magazine is kind of a loss leader, right? I don't know for sure how much money they make or lose on it, but they have a travel business, and it's run with a lot of like the ex-fixers from the, you know, Anthony Bourdain's television work, where they'll do a trip to Spain, and it'll be with one of the fixers from his episodes. And I forget the ticket price; it's pretty high. And I was like, wow, that's a great business model. And I love this as a way where like it funds this really high quality, thoughtful media product but it all comes from these trips. And the trips, core to the trips, are these fixers who are these charismatic, personable hosts who can really lead people through these experiences, right? And that's obviously you. That's so like when you're saying retreats, this is what I'm picturing, and I wanted to give that to the listener. But can you tell me a little bit more about this business? Because you sound really excited about it. I know it's because you're going to Belize tomorrow, but it also sounds like could be a really good sustainable business and the core of your business for many years going forward. So tell me about this retreats business.
Well said. And yes, when I first did my first retreat, I had no intentions on making money or doing a business model. I was reached out to by the owner of this place called Jay Jungle in Belize. And he was like, hey, do you want to do a retreat here? And I was like, I definitely would love to take a free trip there with some friends. And so I was like, hey, can we come see the place and film and see if this is something that we would actually do a retreat at? We got there and fell in love with the place. And so we said, let's do a retreat. So as four big content creators decided to do a retreat together. We made no money, but we had a really good time. And our guests had a beautiful time. And so the second time we was like, all right, let's remodel this a little differently so we could at least make money to cover our time. And I did it with another friend of mine and it was success. And after that, I've stepped back and I started to just analyze what the retreat meant to me and what it meant to others and where we're going to as a civilization. I started to realize how when I went there for 7 days, I came back recharged, rejuvenated, and also refocused and created better content. And the third or fourth retreat I did, I've nailed down what it was. So we're in a jungle and we have no reception. You know, there's a one common area that we could sit down and we could check our phones and check our computers really fast. And at first that was an inconvenience to me. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I can't, you know, check my phone. I can't check my messages, people reaching out to me. But believe it or not, that was healing for my mental health to give myself space.
Oh, I believe it.
You know, like we're so conditioned. Like the first thing we do in the morning, grab our phone and we're like, all right, let me check this. What's on my schedule to do? When do you ever have time for yourself? And when do you ever have time to rebuild and find out what's working and what's not? And so the retreat space to me, now I'm in a phase of, I built this perfect structure in Belize where it's the perfect model. I trained chefs out there to cook my recipes and I cook for my guests at the same time. And I have so many people ask me like, hey, when are you going to open a restaurant? And I'm like, never. I already did it. And it was the hardest thing I ever did. I would open restaurants in like Rwanda. I just came back from Rwanda, Africa, and I helped a friend open a restaurant there with the menu, seeing that the numbers and how it could possibly work there is a lot different than working in the United States. And so I probably would never open another restaurant personally in the United States, but this is my outlet so I could cook for people. I could serve. Like I literally bring the plates out and put it on my guest table and do the, you know, activities. So I give 100% of myself, 150% of myself for those 6-7 days there where I just don't stop. And so
if you allow me to be crude about the business side of it for a second. So you say it's like 6-7 days. How many, like the business side of it, people are paying to come out here if you're comfortable sharing the ticket price, and then like how many people are going out for that week?
It varies anywhere from 17 to 18. I fill up, I max the available spaces out. And it could range from, you know, I do my best to keep things affordable. And so it could range anywhere from 2000 to, you know, 5000, depending on, if you want a single room or if you're, you know, looking to room with others. And that includes food, that includes activities, that includes the healing, that includes, pickup from the airport. It includes there. All you got to do is get there and we take care of the rest.
I think it's about half the price of that other business I was talking about. So you're doing pretty good.
It's not, again, I do need money. We all need money, but I also want to make this available the best I can. And doing it in Belize allows me to do that as well. Like I said, it's difficult operating in the United States with the cost of food and things like that as well. So nothing but whole foods. And also it's an opportunity to allow people to experience, you know, food outside of the United States. And that's a whole nother conversation. So last year I did two. This year I'm on number three. I'm planning to book another one in October. So that'd be four this year. maybe five. And next year, I'm already planning one in my backyard in Joshua Tree. I'm planning to do one in Florida. I'm planning to do one in Rhonda. And so, yeah, this is something that I can see myself continuing to be passionate about. I'm actually thinking about opening a different part of the business that does focus on, you know, retreats and helping people make that leap. A good example is like going to Africa to me was very terrifying, you know, initially, you know, based on all the things that you hear and, you know, the travel, it took 30 hours to get there going, you know, by yourself. And those things are could be terrifying. And so to help others make that leap without those fears and helping them cross the boundaries, that, you know, is something important to me.
Yeah, I can tell. I mean, you're really lighting up talking about it. I can tell that this is something that's really exciting you right now. I want to talk about the platforms for a second. So you said that you really started on Instagram and then TikTok really helped you grow. And then you moved back to Instagram and expanded into YouTube. You're on all these posting all the same shorts, short videos, vertical videos for the most part. And then you're hitting that lull a year or two ago, you were saying, and then you go on Facebook. So this is sort of your platform story. Within this all, I noticed that you on YouTube, you've published some horizontal long form videos, but none since November 2025. There was a brand partnership. You hadn't really posted there regularly since February 2025. And going back to what you were saying at the start of this conversation about, you know, coming from more of the videography for brands, for your rap group, I imagine those were more narrative and like long form horizontal videos, all of which to ask, is that something that you are working on? Is that like a medium you feel that will serve you, serve your business, serve you creatively? What is horizontal video to you right now?
Great question. And you're right. I started off with horizontal content. Even when IG, remember IG had IGTV?
That was an era.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but it seemed like a lifetime ago. That was my original form of creating content. And so 9x16 was strange to me and felt awkward. And once I made that transition over to, you know, short form content, I found it a little bit more difficult to tell longer stories. But I do have it in me. And there's been time of panic. Like I would say over the last couple of years, I was like, all right, I need to get into long form. I need to reinvest in long form. And I feel like that panic has gone now. And I do think there will be a time where I will do long form content. I documented my entire trip to Rhonda and we're working on producing that. And I'm going to use long form content more for telling those type of stories that can be more impactful long term compared to just doing cooking demos. But there was a point where I just was like, overstressing myself because I wanted to be on every platform in every form and fashion, which was impossible. And so now I just really focus on where the revenue streams coming from, how am I connecting best with people? And when there will be a time where I will go back to that. Right now, I mean, as you know, carousels are fire right now. Fire. And the algorithm, like I'm always trying to stay up to date with the algorithm, and that way I can make these, you know, these transitions or, you know, adjustments. And right now, I don't know if this is 100% sure, but this is what I'm feeding, what I'm learning, that the algorithms are all built on a score now. One score represents, well, a couple years ago, it was Reels was on a different algorithm, Photos on different, Carousel different. Right now, it's like one score. And so if your photos do well, then that carries over to Reels and vice versa. And in Africa, I noticed when I travel, a lot of times my Reels do not do well. And I don't know, I can't put a finger on it, but I started doing carousels in Africa, telling stories through the carousels, 20, you know, 18 to 20 slides telling that story, how I would tell it in Reels. And I would say over the last 3 months, my carousels have been outshining my Reels and help adjust my score for my page. And so now my focus is carousels. You know, I'm gonna do a carousel today. I still will do Reels, but carousels have more importance. Now I understand how to, you know, adapt and promote them. And so I do think there will be a time for long form, and I will utilize it now for like my longer videos that are traveling and, you know, like Africa and Rwanda. But yeah, I just had to decide. Like you said, there's so many different avenues of money that you can make. I talk to people sometime and I have to slow down because I feel like I might be intruding and putting my ideas on people. But when someone's like, oh man, I need to figure out how to make money on social media, like 20 ideas come to my mind, like right away. Even if you don't want to show your face, you know, there's ways you can make money on social media. It's just really just taking it serious. And I think that was the difference for me. Gary Vee is the man. And I use his formula to this day of posting 10 videos, go back, research those 10 videos and find the gems in those 10 videos and then repeat. And so that is like constantly my cycle throughout the last 6-7 years is to post, look at that content and make adjustments. Not take it emotionally or any way like that. Just always use it, you know, from a different perspective.
How long does it take you to do those 10 videos? Like, what is like a work cycle? Do you measure your work in like months or weeks?
It varies. My goal for IG is always 3 reels a week. And, some weeks I do more than that. Sometimes I don't. But Facebook is like my playing field right now.
Tell me more about Facebook, because nobody I talk to is on Facebook. So I'm really actually interested in like, I used to be a Facebook user, you know, probably 2017 is when I stopped going on there. So I don't really know much about Facebook.
Thing I learned about Meta, about a lot of these platforms is if they introduce something to you, or if they're sending you a message like, hey, you know, share your videos over to Facebook. And this is like basically a hint, like this is where the energy's going, and this is something you should look into. And so
this is the frontier. Come do a land grab.
Exactly.
Like there's stuff up for grabs. Yeah.
Exactly the thought. And I saw that with Facebook. And so I would go to meetings and talk to other content creators, and I'd be like, hey man, you posting on Facebook? Oh man, Facebook for older people. Facebook is it's old school. My mom and dad on Facebook. And I'm like, I'm a dad. You know? And so to me, it just made me think about like, Facebook is still the largest social media platform, the most, you know, users. And there's a lot of people my age that hasn't seen the information that I've been posting on Reels and Facebook. And so, Reels and TikTok. And so I started to just post the content on there with no emotion because the page it's nothing. You know, to me, it was not producing any business for me. It wasn't, you know, helping me grow my following. And from there, like, and I would say like 8-9 months, I grew 1 million followers on there, and it changed my business. Like I started seeing my cookbook sell more. I started seeing my retreat sell out. I started seeing like majority of my traffic come 100% from Facebook, where I think 1 month I had reached almost 67 million. The audience, I can't remember what they call it, but I had reached 67 million people that month. And so to me, it was just like an opportunity. And that's the same opportunity I saw with TikTok when no one was there first. And same opportunity I saw with Pinterest and Snapchat and even Lemonade. Any platform that will give me a place to post. We live in a time where we could market ourselves for free, and I see that value.
Are you on all these platforms still, or is it really just like YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and those are the only ones you're active on right now?
I would say those are the main ones I'm active on. I still post on Threads every once in a while, Lemonade, and I think I haven't posted on Red Note, but if I see opportunity there, I'm there.
If you're building your whole video business on platforms like YouTube, here's the uncomfortable truth. They own the audience relationship, not you. That's where Open Video comes in. It lets you host your videos on your own domain under your own brand so you control the channel, the data, and the direct connection to your viewers. And now with the new Open Video MCP server, you could do even more without taking your focus off of your content. With their MCP server, an AI agent can upload, tag, organize, and even analyze your entire video library from a single prompt. Your video stays yours, the busy work gets automated, and you can focus on creating. Check out Open Video for all the details. That's open.video. Really quick about your relationship, your more formal relationship with the platforms, right? For for the listener, I was connected with you because I was doing a piece on Edits, Meta's editing app, and I asked if they had any creators that I should maybe speak to, and they connected us. And you were also just speaking about, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, how early on in the TikTok days, you were TikTok was working with you. So you clearly have always, or seemingly always, as long as you've been doing this professionally, had a pretty formal relationship with the platforms, which is not always common, right? They don't have time or resources to work with everybody. What does that do for you? What are these formal relationships you have with the platforms?
Well, to me, it's just like I study social media so much, and, you know, posting on all the platforms gives you like a realization of how things work sometimes. But it's always good to talk to someone from, you know, the platform to kind of certify some of your thoughts and some of the things that you've been thinking. And so I listen really close whenever I am in those rooms. And those are those nuggets that we were talking about, where I think I did pick up over in one meeting a couple years ago that they wanted to reinvest into Facebook, and they wanted, you know, Reels to be so as successful on Facebook as Instagram. And so that always leads me. And if I hear them say that, then that means that the company is investing time and thought, and that's an opportunity. And so I would say the biggest thing for me that those, you know, those connections with the platforms have brought me, it's just those insights. And again, just being an early adapter allowed me to get connected in TikTok. Early adapter allowed me to get connected and talk to, you know, people at YouTube, and same with Instagram and Facebook. So I would just say those opportunities are just so golden. And if you ever, I have people all the time tell me that, oh, I got reached out to from Meta. They wanted to have a call with me. I'm like, take that call. Like, it's something that will help you, you know, understand more about your business and sort of and make you feel more confident about the direction you're going with your content.
From all these conversations, you know, you're saying how you pick up on some information that's valuable, and then you go out and you go on Facebook. Is there anything right now that you could tell our listeners that's like, here's what I'm hearing right now, here's what you should be doing?
You know, especially with monetization, well, a good example, Instagram right now is monetizing. If you're lucky and you're, you know, able to get monetized, they're monetizing for carousels. And so my advice would be to listen to those signs. You know, every once in a while, Meta sends you a message on your Instagram or your Facebook saying, hey, try this out, or try this out, give this a try. I highly recommend to try those things. One, it's going to put you in a position to try something different, something that may be uncomfortable, a different way to reach your audience. But two, they're pushing these things for a reason, because they want us to be more engaged and connected to our communities in those ways. And so I would just listen to those signs. I know a lot of us get that same message on Instagram saying, hey, do you want to share the same content to Facebook? And a lot of us, I talk to other creators, they're like, oh, I just ignore that. And I hear that a lot from, you know, big creators. And so my advice would be like to not be stuck on one platform. I feel like a lot of us, Instagram is like the one golden platform that everyone wants to be successful on. But you could be successful on Facebook and still get those numbers and still be successful in your own way without having the limelight of Instagram. So I would say just listen to the signs and try new things.
Mm-hmm. Your relationship with your audience, I know this can be different platform to platform. It sounds like the answer to this might be Facebook from what you were saying a little bit ago, but on which platform do you have the most productive or direct relationship with your audience?
It's still Instagram. Instagram, I mean, I have friends and people that have supported me from day one on Instagram, and I'm also always building a new community. So I would say Instagram still is my strongest community, but Facebook is really, really creeping up. And so I do, at the beginning of the year, I did like this mindful eating reset, where you use the broadcast channels to, you know, bring people into one common space, and we all just, you know, motivate and inspire each other to start the year off eating well and sharing ideas. So the year before, I did that on Instagram. And I feel like I got a lot of people excited, and, you know, we did it there. And this year I did it on Facebook, and I actually got way more people in that broadcast channel in a month than I did on Instagram in 2 years. And so I would say Facebook is starting to get to that point where I'm going to have to, you know, nurture both of those communities the same way. Instagram is still my number one platform when it comes to community. Facebook is my number one platform when it comes to reach.
Okay. Yeah. So earlier in this conversation, and when we first spoke about a month ago, you were saying that, you know, you were feeling really uninspired about a year ago. And it sounds like the greenhouse stuff started to really take you out of that and bring you inspiration again and get you excited about doing this work. But I think especially this work where you're putting so much of yourself into it, there's so many peaks and valleys. Is there a moment that you feel was your highest peak to date yet that you haven't yet returned to a peak that high?
Wow, that's a really good question. I can't see a particular moment, but in 2022, I would say around 2023, I had a lot of growth. And at the same time, I was just in love with what I was doing. And I created content daily for probably from 2020 to 2023, almost every single day. I may have missed one day here or there, you know, but very consistent, and it didn't feel like work. And I would say that was my highest moment because I was actually, you know, doing something I love, but also helping people, but also building my brand. I really didn't know what I was doing. Like I had, like I always hear about scaling, and I try to stay away from those words of scaling and all those things and really just focus on just doing, waking up and doing what brings me passion. And I saw the results come from it. And I would say in 2024, I started to focus more for a short period of time on numbers. And this is around the time where social, I would say, you know, Reels really got popular and my content may have got saturated. And I started comparing myself and I started looking at things from a different window until, you know, I had to bring myself back to my intent and realize like I'm being controlled by five senses right now by this algorithm. And if this video doesn't do well, then, oh, my content is not as good. And so I went through a moment of that where my self-worth was almost measured by how good my content was. You know, there was times where I felt like, oh man, I might be falling off, you know, and I never was falling off. The industry just got saturated. And so now I'm back in a beautiful space. And I think what really helped me was these retreats, you know, stepping out of the house and getting away from my camera, getting away from social media and interacting with others and falling in love with my passion again. And so I feel like right now I'm back at 2023 stage. But yeah, I would say that was my high. And then I had some lows in 2024 where I was just questioning, what am I doing?
That's a good answer. Yeah. I mean, you're saying basically that like sort of the hardest part and maybe your least favorite part of this job, this work is how much you have to rely on the machine, how kind of hooked up you have to be to the machine of the algorithm. And, you know, for you, it's like walking away from that and like listening to yourself and what do I really want to be doing in this is what rejuvenates you and keeps you excited. 2 years from now, you know, people will ask 5 years from now, what do you want to be doing? That's too long. 2 years from now, how do you want your business and the way you're working to be different from it is today? What's different? What's changed? What's evolved? What have you left behind?
Well, great question. So I'm, like I said, I turned 50 this year. I had a friend that is just moved to Rwanda and he's 52 years old. And he's retiring. For me, I always want to continue to give in this way. I don't know if it's going to be through social media or what platform that will be or how I'm helping people, but I always see myself giving in this form of inspiring through food or grow your own food or just challenging the things that you were taught and learned for yourself. How will I do that? I'm not 100% sure. I do see myself building some type of compound in the desert. And it's like crazy because I have this thought and it's in my mind, but I don't act on it too much. But the universe is bringing those things to me. And so just in the last three months, I've had three opportunities for large amount of acres to build some type of community that's sustainable, that's living off of solar power, that is, you know, living off of wells. And so I do see myself doing something like that and turning that into a retreat space in a near future. I do think we're all going to need more connection and more you know, detoxing from digital life. And so I do see myself doing that, and also do see myself preparing to not have to always work so hard or always have to work where I could wake up in the morning and give in the way that I want to. If I want to wake up and go donate my time to, you know, feeding kids or, you know, helping, you know, show an audience or someone how to grow food, then I could just do that, you know. And so that's where I see myself walking towards in the next 2 years and being there in 5 years.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it sounds to me like sort of your goal 2 years from now beyond that is like maybe you're doing like 5-6 retreats per year and that's most of your income. And then your content becomes largely, you know, you do a bit of it for fun, but also a distribution channel to bring people into your retreats. And you know, I don't know if you've just got the one greenhouse that you're sitting in right now. And maybe then it's, well, it's actually 10, 15, something like that.
It's been waiting to build. Like, I don't know either. Like, so in Joshua Tree where I live, there is no farmers. It's just not, it doesn't happen up in the high desert. So all of our food comes from Coachella, or it comes from up north, or it comes from, you know, different parts of California. I do want to be one of the first farmers in Joshua Tree where I build aeroponics, where we can provide fresh, you know, lettuce and fresh veggies to the high desert. That's something that would bring me joy. So that's something else I do see myself doing in the near future. So this first greenhouse was, you know, my playing field, a lot to learn what grows really good in the desert, how this is going to work. Second one's going to be a little sharper. And then I think that third one's going to be the business model.
I love it. Todd, we will end it right there. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, my friend.
Hi there. My name's Tom. I'm the producer of the Creator Spotlight podcast. I've just made a playlist on our YouTube channel of our top 10 episodes. So whether you're new here or you've been watching and listening for a little while, check out that playlist to make sure you've seen and heard our top 10 most popular episodes. I'll keep the playlist updated as the top 10 changes. If you're on YouTube, just click on that box over there. That's our top 10.